Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I want to remind you on the way back to this our conversation here that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the University of Maryland Transplantation Program. Nearly 2,000 Marylanders are waiting for an organ transplant. The University of Maryland conducts research and performs procedures designed to optimize transplant rates and provide least invasive surgeries for organ donors. More information about the University of Maryland's transplant program and becoming an organ donor is available online at umm.edu/transplant. We're now joined once again by Abiyomi Azikwe, who is editor of the Pan-African Newswire. Abiyomi, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
It's always a pleasure to have you with us here on the air. We want to talk a bit about the Kenyan election coming up. It was plagued by violence when it took place before in 2008, right?
Yes, very much so.
Talk about what's changed and the significance of what's happening right now in Kenya with this election.
Well, the elections began today, March 4th, and what's different today than 5 years ago is that the political parties involved have made a concerted effort to minimize political tensions. They have all been emphasizing that the election should be peaceful. However, it remains to be seen. There were reports today that some 15 people were killed outside the capital of Nairobi. It's not clear to what degree the killings were a direct result of the national elections. Some 5 years ago, the two main contenders, Moi Kibaki as well as Raila Odinga, there was a runoff in the election process, and then as a result of that, there was a delay in the announcing of the runoff elections. Tensions flared. And, of course, hundreds of people lost their lives in the conflict. The conflicts that took place in December of 2007 and in January of 2008 took on an ethnic character as well. And this was very unfortunate because Odinga, who comes from the Luo nationality, and Kibaki, who comes from the Kikuyu, there has been an attempt, even under British colonialism, to pit these two groups against each other. And, of course, the political character of the violence took on an ethnic dimension in 2007 and 2008. There was no clear-cut winner to the elections. It required the intervention of the United Nations as well as the African Union and other regional organizations that actually negotiated a political settlement to the conflict. The government of national unity was established between Kibaki as president and Raila Odinga as prime minister. So everyone is anticipating the outcome of the elections. This time, Uhuru Kenyatta, who is the son of the founder of the nation, Jomo Kenyatta, is one of the major contenders, and Raila Odinga, who in fact is the son of Oginga Odinga,
right,
who is also a leading political figure during the 1960s as well.
So I'm wondering, you know, when we read in the press, much of what we read about Kenyan elections and some other elections on the continent, but in Kenya specifically here, is that this is, you know, this kind of multinational country of ethnic groups, a number of ethnic groups in Kenya. No one has a majority in terms of ethnic groups in Kenya. That we break it down on ethnic groups. Is there something beyond that? Is there something that goes either to the depth of political and economic and social issues that are raised by these parties that are very different? And how much of it goes back to the early days of the Kenyan democracy after they threw the Brits out, that between Oginga Odinga and Jomo Kenyatta, who had a split after a while? And how much is that? I mean, what's beyond just this kind of ethnic divide we read about in the press?
Well, there are clearly socioeconomic problems in Kenya. When the country underwent
I'm sorry, Abiyomi, you're breaking up a little bit. Just try that again.
Okay, I just wanted to mention that there are socioeconomic reasons behind the conflict in Kenya that go back at least to the 1950s when the country embarked upon its national liberation struggle. This struggle was severely repressed by British colonialism. Thousands upon thousands of people were killed in the process. In 1952, the Kenyan Land and Freedom Army, which popularly is known as the Mau Mau, began a campaign of sabotage and struggle inside of Kenya. And in response to that, the British colonialists detained over a million people, and tens of thousands were killed and brutalized. And of course, this was they attempted to conceal this, but eventually it was made public, and it became an international issue. This forced the British to bring about some type of transitional process. But the suppression of the National Liberation Movement between 1952 and 1956 still lingers today in modern-day Kenya. In fact, the leader of the Kenyan Land and Freedom Army was, of course, executed by the British in 1956. His name was Dedan Kimathi, and you very rarely hear his name ever mentioned in any political discourse in Kenya, because when the country gained its independence in 1963, there was a concerted effort aimed at national reconciliation, because the British, who had engineered these mass killings and incarcerations, also utilized African surrogates in the whole process. So in order to bring about some semblance of national reconciliation, the actual history of the Kenyan National Liberation Movement has been severely depressed. At the same time, the demand for land was not fulfilled after 1963, when the country gained its independence. So you still have a huge class divide that exists in Kenya. There's extreme poverty that exists in the cities as well as the rural areas. So this is the process that has never been fully completed in regard to national liberation. Also, we have to take into account the maintenance of a close alliance with Britain in regard to the government that came to power after 1963, and also a burgeoning relationship with the United States as well as the State of Israel after 1963, and of course that extended over the last five decades. So still today in Kenya, you have a very close Western allied oriented government, and that's reflected in many dimensions of Kenyan society in terms of the economy, the class structure of the society, and also its foreign policy. For example, Kenya is heavily involved in the war in Somalia. They have deployed several thousand troops to Somalia, and they are part of a U.S.-backed effort in Somalia.
Is that part of the election at all? I mean, are these issues in the election now? Are different parties taking different positions?
They have an impact because you have a large Somali population in Kenya. Many of them have been there for centuries. Others have come there to escape the war in neighboring Somalia. And, of course, this has an impact on how the government is going to proceed in regard to their continuing involvement in Somalia. They're there under the auspices of a African Union mission to Somalia. But it came out later, after Kenya intervened in 2011, it came out through WikiLeaks documents that the U.S. Department of Defense had actually been in consultation with the Kenyan Defense Forces for some 2 years prior to their intervention in Somalia. So it's an ongoing process of national liberation, and it's no different than what we see in many other African countries. You may have political independence, but the economic structures and the class divisions inside the society still reflect the legacy of colonialism, and of course, neocolonialism is more of a proper description of the political and economic system that exists in Kenya, as well as other states throughout Africa. So you just can't single out Kenya in isolation.
Well, no, right, right. Abiyami, we only have like a few minutes left, but I'm curious if you would talk about what you think the outcome will say. I mean, this is, and people are still fearing the violence could erupt. And what would the outcome of your analysis of what the outcome of this election might mean?
Well, I think the leading parties, now there are eight contenders in the presidential elections, but the leading figures, Uhuru Kenyatta and Raila Odinga, I honestly believe that they do not want the violence to erupt inside the country. It would be very bad for the economic situation inside the country, and it would be very bad in regard to Kenya's international image as well as its foreign policy in East Africa, and particularly would have a dramatic impact on their involvement in Somalia, because how can they serve as peacekeepers in neighboring Somalia when, in fact, they are not able to stabilize the situation inside their own country amid a national election? So it's hard to predict, but I do not believe at this point that the situation will reach the boiling point that it did some 5 years ago, where it's estimated that over 1,200 people were killed in this factional fighting.
And I think that it sounds like, from all the analysis I've seen, that there's a good chance that the violence may not take place like it as it did before.
Well, we can only hope that is the situation. There's been a tremendous campaign leading up to the elections by all the political parties involved, as well as non-governmental organizations who are inside the country working, encouraging people to remain calm, to accept the outcome of the elections. However, it appears as if, according to the polls that have been taken, that it's going to be a very close election, that neither Kenyatta or Odinga will win an outright majority in the first round, and that will necessitate the need for a runoff election. And that, as well, could be very close. In politics, sometimes things can get irrational. They can get very heated. And unfortunately, when you have weapons involved and you also have people's livelihoods involved, it can be a very tense situation.
We only have about a minute left here, Abiyama, but I guess politically and economically, whoever wins this presidency will not make that much difference between the different parties, right, for the future?
Well, in terms of their overall ideological outlook, they don't appear to be that much different.
That's what I thought.
That is the irony of the situation. Neither of the two political parties, the leading political parties as represented by Uhuru Kenyatta and Raila Odinga, are calling for any radical changes in regard to the foreign policy of the country or the domestic policy of the country. So that is what is needed. And in the long term, I believe that is what is going to come about, because with the extreme poverty that exists in places like Kibera and other areas in the capital, it's going to require a radical redistribution of resources and also a real challenge to bringing about some type of social existence inside of Kenya, where you have a real democratic and economic system, a democracy in regard to the economic system inside Kenya.
It's always a pleasure to have you with us. Abiyama Azikiwe is editor of the Pan-African Newswire, joins us to talk about issues in the Mother Continent, and will continue to do so, and we appreciate you taking the time for our listeners once again.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
We'll take a very brief break, and we will come back here to the United States and take a look at the legacy of Henrietta Lacks, whose tissues were used to fight cancer, but unbeknownst to her, we'll talk about the whole issues of medical ethics and bioethics, race, and our institutions here, coming up in the next part of our program. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.